It's very important when working with Steiner's pictures of history to realize that though he is not stretching so incredibly far back, he does emphasize that of the first post-Atlantean and second post-Atlantean periods, there remains in terms of historical artifacts or any kind of physical documentary evidence, zero. He says there's really nothing. Not because it's been destroyed or buried by cultures that came later, but rather, as he said, because up until about 4,500, 3,500, 3,000 BC, right up until then, the conditions of earthly life were still very different from the way they are today. And this is where Steiner's historical picture varies very strongly from what we accept today. He said that the earth was, as it were, softer, that it was more permeated by spirit and forces of light, that in many respects, people did not need to build anything or create anything. They were able to live far more readily embedded in nature, and they did not need to make statues to their gods. They did not need to build temples to their gods because the gods were, in all respects, there. They did not need something to help them remember what gods looked like, when all they needed to do was go outside and one would be there. So I'm giving it as a very simplified picture, but this is very important. And this is where we have to diverge from Steiner's teaching and look more towards the teaching of conventional history. We have to really walk a middle path because we are dealing with cultures, which we might call Indian or Persian, but we're dealing with them at a very different time than Steiner described. And this becomes more obvious in this third post-Atlantean epoch. This is the Taurus period, where the sun rose in the sign of Taurus. So here you have a quality of something accepting earthly gravity, something which is helping people find their form and their relationship to the earth itself. And in this time, this is about 4,500 to 2,000 BC, 1900 BC at the most. So now, obviously, we're coming to a period of time that I think everybody can agree has been documented, has been preserved in one way or another. And some of the salient qualities that Steiner describes in this 1,700 year period, is that now the priest, the initiate who was a priest, now becomes the priest who is a king. Now priestlyhood takes on something of the quality of kingship as well. And we can see why this is the Egyptian period and how the pharaoh really embodies that. This was also a time when the sense of separation from the cosmos led then to an objectification of the cosmos. And with this, in some more advanced cultures, a kind of pulling away from the deification of cosmic beings and an objectification, a way of studying them as though they were mere phenomena and not anything really divine, though recognizing they bore the signature of the divine. So now we see that force of thinking whose seeds lie back in the Indian epoch is really coming to the fore. And we see the beginnings now of astronomy and the development of numerical systems and the beginning of sculptures and temples, now people have to be given a physical image of the divine world because they can't necessarily see it for themselves. Only the priest king has the capacity of looking into that world. Everyone else must look to him, or if not to him, at least to his image, to his symbols. So symbolic thinking now takes on a very important place in human consciousness, and that certainly has not abated to our day. Symbols are very, very important for us. Now we have the interest also in life after death. Where do the dead go? Is death an end of life, or is it a return to one's home in the cosmos? A question not asked really before this, when again it was pretty obvious. Very interesting that this is the time in which Judaism arises, and or the ancient Israelites anyway, later to become Judaism. And Judaism among religions is one with the least to say about the afterlife. It's really left as a kind of question there. Something of the spirit of this time. So now we have buildings, hieroglyphs, cuneiforms, arithmetic, legal codes. All of this arises in this intensely busy and active third post-Atlantean period. And this is also the time when the Indo-Aryans pressed into the Indus Valley. They came from the east, and rather the west, and started to press in further east. And this is where the ancient Indian scriptures receive their final form. And this is where the battles going on at that time are reflected in the great epics that we have. So we see that the Indian culture that we study and teach actually belongs more to the third post-Atlantean period, because we don't have anything left from that first post-Atlantean period. Even we might say the stories of Persia are told about Persians who were still living during the third post-Atlantean period. So this period is incredibly important. Here we could say is the true beginning of something approximating human culture, which has a degree of independence from the spiritual world. And then last but not least, for sure, we have the time of Aries, the Aries period, when the sun rose in Aries every springtime. And this is the fourth post-Atlantean period, spoken of as the Greco-Latin by Steiner. And this is from about 1900 to about 100 BC. So just 1800 years. And it's not really until 800 BC, not even then, more like 750 BC, that the real Greco-Latin period begins. So now we're much, much closer to our time. Now we're less than 3,000 miles back. And here we have a huge leap forward, like the ram of Ares, hopping around happily, jumping over those crevices in the mountains, and always at the beginning of something, and very much related to the head of the human being. So certainly now the forces of thinking start to grow in importance and in power. Now we have the Greek mysteries, and we have gods who were presented with many human qualities, that no longer is it that humans aspire to be more godlike, but now rather they draw the gods into being more human-like. They present gods who love human beings and who are very engaged in the everyday life of humanity. And now we have a new kind of mystery, the Eleusinian mysteries. And we also have mysteries in which the divine is completely supplanted by mathematics and geometry. The Pythagorean mysteries, which extend all the way through the schools of Socrates and Plato in particular. Plato regarded himself as a Pythagorean. And now instead of divine edict, the search is for natural laws. Now instead of direct perception of the divine, leading to symbolic pictorial activity, now we have abstract cognition, the ability to think in abstractions, and the beginning of the human individuality who's able to stand apart from the group and begin in the smallest way to think for him or herself. And now we also have, of course, though Greek culture predominates, and it's the one that we're going to study in this time, but it's good to remember that parallel to it, ancient Rome is also developing at the same time. So that brings us up to 100 BC, and we're going in grade 6, as I said. I'll always jump back and forth a little bit. In grade 6, we're going to go back and start again at about 800 BC. We're going to teach the children about the Trojan War, but from the other side, from the side of the Trojans, and the parallel growth of Rome will be our emphasis at that time. And we will, most teachers try to get as far as ideally the year 13, 1400 AD in grade 6. So not quite the scope and span of grade 5, but certainly a period that has a lot going on in it altogether. And just to go back for a moment to grade 4. Okay, we have Norse myths there. So where do they belong in this whole picture? With ancient India or Persia, or how many tens of thousands of years back do they go? Well, very interesting. The Norse myths that you taught last year actually were codified at the end of the first millennium. That is to say, at the beginning of the second millennium, around the year 1000 AD, around the year 1000 AD. Those stories, those myths, were being experienced and enacted by the Norse people for hundreds and hundreds of years during the post-Christian epoch. So they had very little culture, basically no culture to speak of, BC, but these Norsemen and their culture really began to flourish and become most important in the years during the reign of Christianity in Europe. They remained the last holdouts. Very interesting. In fact, Steiner says that the reason that we'd want to teach them in fourth grade, even though we could say those myths are late, they are really the last people on earth to be thinking in a purely mythopoetic way. It's just because they were experiencing their gods directly for much longer than any of the cultures that we study in grade 5. He says that much of what we study in grade 5 are already memories of the work of the gods in the myths. There's not a whole lot of direct experience in these stories. A lot of it has to do with stories that were told, that were told, that were told, whereas the Norsemen in grade 4 were having a direct experience. So that direct experience is younger in a way. and what we're getting now in grade 5 already has come to a degree of maturity. It's already moving from direct experience to memory. And in the third part of this discussion of the what, I'll go on into some more detail about the content that you want to bring to the children in grade 5 history.